This is the Way Back Throwback, Episode 1. The Way Back Throwback is brought to you by the Trending Topics Network. Check out some great shows like Fight Show Live, Trending Mobile Technology, and The Real News. Welcome to the first ever inaugural episode of the Way Back Throwback, where we look back but don't stare. We're going to talk about all kinds of 80s, 90s cartoons, movies, but this week in particular, we're going to talk about something near and dear to my heart, Nintendo Entertainment System. Guys, so the Nintendo Entertainment System, also known as NES, 8-bit video game console, was developed and manufactured by Nintendo. It was initially released in Japan as the Family Computer, also known as the Famicom, on July 15th, 1983, and was later released in North America during 1985 and Europe in 1986. NES is the best-selling gaming console of its time. The NES helped revitalize the U.S. video game industry along with the Atari 7800 following the video game crash of 1983 and set the standard of subsequent consoles of its generation. With the NES, Nintendo introduced a new standard business model of licensing third-party developers, authorizing them to produce and distribute titles for Nintendo's platform. In 2009, Nintendo Entertainment System was named the single greatest video game console in history by IGN out of a field of 25. 2010 marked the system's 25th anniversary in North America, which was officially celebrated by Nintendo of America's magazine, Nintendo Power, if you guys remember that. This was issue 260 with a special 26-page tribute section. Let's get our opening thoughts. Actually, we'll start with the intro of the panel. We got, this week, we got Kebo Trek.
Yo.
We got D-Ren.
How's it going?
And we have our NES champion, we got Scruff.
Yo.
Let's get your opening thoughts on your experience with NES, your first games, your first feelings when you first got it. Let's get all nostalgic, people. Kebo Trek, let's start with you. Opening thoughts.
I guess my opening thoughts would be is like that it was such a big part of like my childhood. Even though it wasn't the first gaming console I had, like we had Atari growing up as well. You remember Nintendo. You remember sitting with your little 10-inch TV and just playing for hours and hours. You can have a party of 10 people, you're just sitting there, then out of nowhere the game will shut off and you spend 10 minutes blowing into the cartridge trying to get it to work.
Speaking of the blowing into the cartridge, I don't know how that got around. It's like an urban legend of the fact that you'd have to blow into it to somehow fix that blinking problem, which landed up being an issue with the 72-pin connector. You know, back in the day, we didn't have the internet, so we couldn't figure out, oh yeah, it's just this connector, you replace it. So this urban legend got around that blowing on the cartridge and into the console would have somehow fixed it, but you would do it for like half an hour and it would literally make no change, no difference at all.
But it's like it's weird how everyone did it. Like anyone who had an NES did that.
Yeah it got around globally. You got people in China like blowing on the cartridge, Africans blowing on the cartridge, like.
And I think you're wrong. It did help it.
It did not help it at all. I'm sorry, but like, I literally lost all my breath blowing for 30 minutes on friggin' Punch Out, and it did nothing.
Well, see, I was able to realize that it didn't work, and what I used to do was I used to put the second Nintendo game on top of the first Nintendo game.
The Genie.
No, not the Game Genie. You would actually have enough room to put a second Nintendo cartridge on top of the first one, which would force the other one down and reset the pins. It would always work.
Also, you could do the kind of the reboot trick where you'd play with the reset button.
But the worst is like when you, like after 10 minutes, you finally get it to work and then someone steps on the floor and then it just shuts off and you're like
you oh. Bastard.
But yeah, I don't know, like, you know, in hindsight, it makes it fun talking about like these kind of experiences that gamers today probably don't really know about.
That's true. D-Ren, opening thoughts on NES.
Yeah, to me, obviously the nostalgia, but just when you think about Nintendo, you just think about so many classic games. Like now games have so much production values and graphics, but some of them are really shit. And you don't find as many classic games on PS3, on Xbox 360, like N64, as you do on Nintendo. You can talk about 60 games on Nintendo easily being classics.
And everybody looks back to it. Like, you know, I've heard podcasts, they have all the kind of the retro themes. And I mean, these games, 30 years later, are still classic and great to play. Don't get me wrong, there was a lot of shit on the NES, but there were a lot of great gems and franchises that still go to this day. Legend of Zelda, Mario. I mean, Punch-Out was redone. we're going to mention our favorite games, but there's just so many of these franchises that have been brought back so many times. Castlevania, Contra, and it just goes to show with the limitations they had, some of the great gems they could make.
Yeah, for sure. But you look at Castlevania, it was remade, I think, on N64, and that was just atrocious. I know Zelda's had a kind of a rebirth on like the various Nintendo platforms, but just seeing them trying to bring back like games. I know we're not talking about Genesis, but
Metroid was a great it's a great franchise.
Yeah, for sure. But when it was brought back on the, I don't know if it was N64 or if it was GameCube, it was not as good. It's just it's kind of hard to replicate that the genius that Castlevania or Zelda had.
Yeah, Scruff, let's get your opening thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, to go back to what Darren said, I'd love to debate with him about the amount of classics games on the Xbox 360, PS3 world. But that being said, you know, if you guys go back to the nostalgic factor and what's actually still going on today in pop culture based on Nintendo, it's amazing. You know, you guys missed two of the biggest game franchises right now in Metal Gear and Prince of Persia, which have turned into huge franchises for both Konami and Ubisoft. When we also look at how Nintendo has permeated pop culture to this day, it's quite amazing. You know, I just watched this movie called The Kings of Summer by Jordan Vaught Roberts, and I listened to an interview with him because one of the things I really enjoyed about the movie was the music, how it made me feel like I was on an adventure. And he spoke to that, and he spoke to the fact that he actually was using music based on Nintendo games. And he wanted to get the feel of you're getting through a level in Nintendo. And I would guarantee anybody who's in my age group, you know, somewhere from 27 to 38, who's had a long history with Nintendo, would watch that movie and just feel themselves getting through to the next level. The other thing I wanted to say about Nintendo is, you know, we often look at it with rose-colored glasses, but there were some games on there that would drive me insane. My mom would have to take the Nintendo away from me because I would go into rage fits playing Silver Surfer and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's true. I mean, I'm not a violent person, but I can remember smashing my controller, you know, my brother threatening to throw out my console out the window because of like Ninja Gaiden or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Some of these games, you know, they didn't have these auto saves like they did back in the day. You die, you're fucked. That's it. You start from the beginning.
You know, and we look at how games are made today. You know, let's look at Eidos Square Enix. They have a team in Montreal that's over 250 people that only do quality assurance. All they do is make sure that there's not that many bugs in the game. You read back into the old days of Nintendo, the QA teams for these games were 1 to 2 people. You know, they just didn't care about QA. All they cared about is that they had an exclusive console and they wanted to put as much content out as possible.
Yeah, so Nintendo back in the day was very restrictive on the content that could go on there. You know, Apple's gotten a lot of flack for that nowadays, but back then it was really difficult to get on the console. They had like lockout chips on the cartridge and stuff. And back in the day, being a third-party developer, I think was a lot more difficult than today where you've got all these open platforms.
Yeah, and if you also look at Nintendo now, they still have that same problem. You know, they're still one of the hardest consoles for third-party developers to make money on. You know, Nintendo's opened up the doors a little bit, but they still really only promote and encourage people to buy their titles, the Marios and the Zeldas of the world, not the third-party developers. And I think that's caused a huge detriment to them. If we look at the first Wii, it obviously had a big ramp-up in sales because of the cool factor of the nunchucks, but it slowed down really fast, and I really think that was because of lack of third-party development. We move into the Wii U. Nintendo just released that they're going to miss their forecast by 70% on the Wii U.
Wow.
You know, they wanted to sell 10.1 million units. They sold just under 3 in the first year. If you want to compare that, both Microsoft and Sony have sold 3.5 million units a month of the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it's not even comparable. And definitely Nintendo has a big issue in their future, maybe even, you know, getting out of the console market altogether. But if we can divert very quickly, question for you guys. When did you get your first Nintendo? For me, it was Christmas of 87.
So, yeah, there's a little bit of a story about how I got my first Nintendo. My mom was dating this ruffian who was hanging out with the biker gangs of Montreal at the time. And one day he came home and he gave me a Nintendo. And I was the happiest person in the world. We didn't grow up with a lot, and I had a black and white TV that I hooked it up to, but I didn't care. And about a few hours later, my grandmother came out of her room screaming, and it turns out that somebody had stolen about $3,500 worth of cash from her sock drawer. And then they saw me with this Nintendo, and Bob's one thing was, you can't tell anybody where you got it. And even from a young age, I always knew the saying, snitches get stitches. So I didn't say a damn thing, and I kept my Nintendo. And my mom and grandmother were convinced that I stole the money and bought a Nintendo.
Oh, shit.
So they took it away from me for a while, and I got some lashes, and I got laughed at. But eventually we were able to figure out it was Bob, and they gave it back and apologized and didn't make me return it. And I was the happiest little boy in NDG for a while.
What a story, man. All I got was like Christmas 87, you know. I got my Nintendo, but I didn't get beaten or...
Well, I didn't
get
beaten. I just...
Yeah.
I didn't walk around with a limp for a month or anything.
What a story. Okay, Kev, Darren, what are your first memories about getting your first Nintendo?
I don't remember where we got it. Do you remember?
No, I remember the first four games we had, but I don't remember the story behind how we got it at all.
I remember my second Nintendo was a couple years later. When the first one crapped out, we didn't know to replace the connector. This is when I still believed the Toothberry existed. And, you know, I'd get a dollar or two, whatever, under my bed for, you know, a missing tooth. And then one day, I come back from school, and my tooth's gone, and there's an NES under my pillow. And I'm thinking, hold on a second. How the fuck did that little Toothberry carry in this giant console and, like, put it under my bed when I didn't notice? And that was the time I realized that the Toothberry did not exist.
I have a question to the panel. Do you think we're too coddled today with today's games?
Oh yeah, it's auto saves every 2 seconds, and it's too easy. You know, I would love to see the gamers of today try NES for more than an hour and not get frustrated and stop playing.
Well, do you remember when we had the NES night at your place? And we couldn't get, like, past level 3 of Mario, like, world 3 of Mario 3. We were, like, getting so frustrated. So
it was ridiculous, yeah.
Well, so games today are made to get through, right? They're made to tell the whole story, and, you know, so that's why they're a lot easier. But in the last, I'd say, 18 months, there's been a huge move to indie games. And those indie games are really harking back to the days of Nintendo, where they're focused on innovative gameplay, puzzle-solving, learning and adapting, and also being very difficult. You know, if you guys haven't seen it, there's a great movie about this trend called Indie Game to Movie on Netflix. There's also as a couple of great games that you guys can go check out on YouTube that have really started this trend. Super Meat Boy is a great one. Fez, for us Montrealers, that's developed right here. That's an amazing one. My favorite game of the group is called Bastion, B-A-S-T-I-O-N. And they're really focused on the old school Nintendo style of gameplay, creating that story, creating that universe that you just get so immersed into.
With today's kids of like the short attention spans and the multitasking, do you think if the major developers went that route of 3 deaths, you're gone, do you think there would be a massive backlash, or do you think gamers would see it as more of a challenge and they try to go for it?
Well, are you asking a question for gamers or are you asking a question for young kids?
I'd say both.
You know, from the young kids' perspective, I think that's a little bit of a detriment because it would go back to the rage fits that we used to have. I think there is something to be said about the saving of games and the ability to move on from where you last died. But I think there would be a really good challenge mode inside of games for the old school Nintendo gamers like ourselves to create modes like that. You know, create what's called the 8-bit mode, since probably Nintendo's trademarked.
Yeah.
And just go through the game with 3 lives and see how well you can do.
You know, I remember playing Super Contra, and if you don't use that cheat, like, you're not getting past it. There's no way.
The first Contra is impossible without the cheat. And the Konami would even mention that. You know, it's funny, you bring up Contra. I was at a trivia night in Toronto right before Christmas, and one of the first questions was, up, up, down, down, left, right refers to what?
Yeah, it's really got into popular culture, you had mentioned earlier. It's, you know, I mean, back in the day when Nintendo tried to push their titles to movies and failed miserably with Mario and even, I guess, you know, The Wizard was a fun movie, but, you know, it didn't generate kind of any.
Well, The Wizard was a commercial.
Yeah, it was. It was a giant commercial for Mario 3.
But absolutely. If we want to look at successes Nintendo's had outside of the video game world, I would say, you know, they had a couple of cartoons in the 80s and 90s that were both really good. The Super Mario Brothers cartoon was a lot of fun, as well as Captain N the Game Master. I loved to watch.
Yeah, Super Show. Then they had Zelda on Fridays. No, that did very well. I would agree. I love that. Speaking of some of the games, let's get our top games. And we're gonna start blurting out some games. Get our thoughts. Mike Tyson's Punch Out. We're gonna start with that.
Yeah, for sure. It's in my top five. Another game that was very hard. You had a limited kind of save once you beat a few opponents. But just trying to play against Mike Tyson is almost impossible. I never beat it. I think the furthest I've got to was a Dream Master. Not the Dream Master, Sandman.
Well, one thing that was interesting with that is they worked with the kind of limitations of the memory. You know, with Zelda, they'd give you 3 save points or 3 users that you could save with. Yeah. And they had a little bit of, if you open up the cartridge nowadays, you see they had a little memory, not a memory card, but I think it was a battery or there was something that allows you to save. But with them, you could actually type in a code, which I thought was interesting. They kind of worked around the limitations of the save in that regard. Glass Joe, of course, you know, they got the iconic, like, I remember a party at Kevin's house, this 6th or 7th birthday. And one of our friends lost the Glass Joe, and it was like the biggest humiliation ever. Like, how the fuck can you lose the Glass Joe? You know what I mean? So, yeah, some of these iconic characters, you got Kaiser, you got Glass Joe.
King Hippo.
Like, yeah, and you go, rah, rah, and you punch him in the stomach or whatever. And Sandman and all these great, like, now even nowadays, you know, you bring it back to the Wii. And they brought a lot of these characters back to just... Like Don Flamingo with the, he'd do like that uppercut, and that was just so much fun with that game. The playability was like off the charts, and I find it such a shame, you know, when they brought it back that they didn't include Tyson. I kind of know why with the whole biting off the ear and the raping and all that kind of stuff, but you know, now that his image is a bit cleaner, do you guys think they would possibly even reconsider having Tyson on one of these games for the Wii U?
I doubt it because of the licensing costs that he would charge them. No, the one thing you can always really look at with Nintendo is that they never pay licensing costs for people. They feel they can build IPs without having a star attached to it.
Yeah, I mean, would he go for that much money now? I mean, he's doing cameos in Rush Hour. Not Rush Hour. He's doing cameos in...
The Hangover.
The Hangover. You know what I mean? Like, how much money is this guy going to ask for? I don't know.
He'll still ask for something big. You know, he's a smart enough guy to see... His name means X amount of sales.
Yeah, or his staff would know anyways. A couple other games. Scruff, you have on the list Castlevania. Get your thoughts on Castlevania.
Yeah, I remember having nightmares because of Castlevania. I didn't really know what vampires were until I played that game. And then people explained them to me, and I was petrified of the game, but I couldn't stop playing it. But for me, the game that I always remember most and as a game that could just never be made on a console today is Narc. I remember just running around throwing dirty needles at addicts. It was there was this massive coked out boss as the main villain.
Other games, I remember getting Dr. Mario for Christmas one time. Tetris as well. These puzzle games were so much fun. I would play for hours and hours and hours Dr. Mario. Absolutely loved it. The themes, too, for Dr. Mario.
But did you play... Like, I don't think I ever played Tetris on the NES. Like, it was all Game Boy for me for Tetris. And even, like, now, like, playing Tetris on the computer, on, you know, whatever, another system, I always go back to Game Boy for Tetris.
Well, I mean, it being the default game that came with the console, for sure.
And it's just like, I guess it's such a simple game where you don't need bells and whistles, and I don't know, it just works so well in the, well, it's not a Game Boy podcast, but it just works so well with the Game Boy.
Do you know why it was the default game? You figure Mario would have been the first Mario Duck Hunt combo for the NES. You'd figure they'd want their own property, right, to be the main game? Like, I found that so weird that Tetris was the main game. Maybe just due to limitations of the console. Maybe the Mario wasn't out yet.
Could it be maybe that because Tetris is more of not an isolated game, but it's more of a you can play for 10 minutes and then kind of just stop. So maybe they wanted like don't know, maybe they figured it'd be like a quicker experience. You play it when you have some time, and I mean, I'm just throwing that out. It just does.
I remember Mario Land was okay. It wasn't blow away good, but I remember it came out later, so maybe it could have been just a
maybe it wasn't question. Developed or.
Yeah, it's possible. Other NES games of interest. I mean, River City Ransom was one of the most immersive games that I remember. You could just go in, and you really like Zelda, where you can go in and just lose yourself in the world, which is very interesting because a lot of the NES games are side scrollers, and you know, if you die three times, you're dead. Like you'd be playing Paperboy for 2 minutes, and then you'd get hit by that stupid woman in the curlers throwing her curling iron at you or whatever, and that's it. Whereas River City Ransom, you'd have to get money to buy stuff, and it's just really a lot more immersive than, you know.
Well, the thing with that, like, would it be fair to say that it was, like, almost like the first GTA? Like, I know it's
it
not...
It kind of was,
not,
yeah.
It's not, obviously, not cars and all. Like, not we're not talking directly, but just, you know, this kind of open world, this, you know, leveling up, you know, getting economy to buy stuff, and... Like, in a way, I think it was a bit ahead of its time just because we didn't really see many open world kind of games like that. I guess you can say like Zelda and things like that. But just, I think.
And now that I think about it that you mention this, some of my favorite games are the open world type of games.
Well, I think part of it, because there just wasn't many. And, you know, at the time, it made, you know, I guess the technology wasn't really there to do that, or there wasn't the inclination. But, you know, you go to River City Ransom, and like, I just think about it like, for 25 years ago or whatever, like that's a pretty detailed and in-depth game.
Yeah, and also the fact that it's, I think it's one of the first game where you level up. So, like, it had kind of that RPG light element. So, it was a lot of fun. I think there's a part that we all couldn't pass. There's a certain part in the game, but I just used to, like, I don't know if you kill them or beat them up and then they would drop the coins. That was a lot of fun.
How about Mega Man? I mean, Mega Man, the franchise is fantastic. So much great music, so many great bosses.
It was one of the hardest, craziest, angriest games of my life. Anytime I think of Mega Man, I think of just wanting to murder everyone around me.
Mario, the Mario franchises, you know, Mario 1 just being that classic game that came with all the consoles, and you play the levels through until you knew the cheats to get to level 2, level 8 right away. So you're like, screw this, I'm not going through the whole rigmarole. I mean, 1 was just a classic game. 2 was interesting because from what I understood, 2 was actually some other game, like some Arabic game that they like put Mario cloned over and they just turned that into Mario 2. And then, of course, Mario 3, you know, we talked about The Wizard not too long ago. Yeah, a big commercial for Mario 3. Just what an upgrade and just a game that you can immerse yourself in. Not open world, but just progressively, you know, you could save and stuff. You didn't lose, go all the way back to the beginning. It just for its time, just one of the one of the best games for the console itself. Any thoughts on Mario, guys?
Well, I loved actually, I know I'm in the minority, but I enjoyed Part 2 better than Part 3 because I just love how what they did to it was so different. And you said, I didn't know it was supposed to be a different game.
It was like a clone of some other, yeah, it was totally, and they just ported it over, put Mario on the guy's head or whatever.
No, but it worked because, I mean, it was just so different than what Mario was about. And it was just so cool picking up the radishes and picking up, tossing them and jumping. I remember at the end of the level when these, like, eagles would spit eggs at you and or these mini bosses would spit eggs and you have to jump on them and, like, pick it up and then throw it at the mini boss. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, Mario 3 is such a great game, but to me, just Mario 2, I loved
digging how through different. The sand and the guy, the snake.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I even know they created, I know with the Wii, you could buy like a pack of the first few Mario games, but they also created a harder game called The Lost Levels. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I heard about it. I never played.
Yeah, it's super hard. just trying to pass the first level was very difficult, so I couldn't even imagine passing the whole game. But it was made, I don't know if it was made for a Japanese audience. I don't know the story about that, but they just didn't release it because it was just very difficult. Maybe they only released it in Japan or Asia. So
the thing with Mario 3 for me is it kind of showed what gaming could become because just it was so expansive and so...
Really brought like the physical limitations to the console, just maxed out the possibilities that you could do with it.
Well, that's it, and I think it showed like what it could become with like the Genesis and the SNES, that next level. And I think Mario 3 was kind of the ultimate of that. Like this is how far we can go, but you get the technology to create, you know, better things, and we can take it further. And I think Mario was the game that kind of showed that we can make games not just, you know, very simple and, you know, not very simple. Like, you can really add some complexity, add a lot more gameplay to it, and just really expand the games and the market.
And when was Mario 3 released? That must have been toward the end of Nintendo's
life cycle. It was early 90s, right? Yeah, it was early 90s.
And when at what Mario 3 did, though, you know, you guys are talking about it from a straight game standpoint, but if we look at what's happening in games today, you know, the launch of the Xbox One, the PS4, all of these new games that came out, each and every time something launches, it's an event. That started with Super Mario Bros. 3. You know, that was the first time I can think of people were lining up to buy games. People were excited, not just kids, not just the video gamers, but people. It was a pop culture society.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted in. The Wizard was obviously a big part of that, but it was something that just permeated that pop culture time frame, and everyone wanted in.
It's when video games became cool. You know, Atari was the first ever mass market console maker, but Nintendo is where it peaked for me. It was like, we're going back to like pro wrestling back in the 80s. That's, you know, when it really hit its echelon. It to me, gaming hit that echelon with the NES, and that's why I think so many people go back to this day and play emulators and buy the consoles and still are very passionate about this console, is because of the fact that it really peaked at that time. Yeah,
I agree and I disagree with your statement there. It peaked their interest at the time. I don't think it's peaked at the time. I don't think we can ever say something's peaked when it's not over. You know, the world of video games is such an evolving, changing world. And as it's going through some evolution right now, to say that Nintendo was at its peak, I would say it's wrong. I mean, I would look at what's happening right now in the casual social gaming world, what's going on with iOS devices, and say right now we're probably at a peak. We got a game right now called Clash of Clans that's averaging $3.7 million of revenue a day.
Wow.
You know, to say Nintendo is the peak, I think, is wrong. But if we're looking at the society of gamers today, you know, it's still a large chunk of the cash-bringing market for video games are the people who grew up playing Nintendo. So our generation. Yeah. So we are now in a place where most of us have disposable income where we can start spending money on what reminds us of our childhood. You know, you watch those shows like Pawn Stars and American Restoration, where people are bringing in little tractor toys from the 1930s because they used to play with it as a kid. That's not our generation. Our generation,
this is our tractor
Nintendo
toys. Yeah.
Refurbished with Dragon, Double Dragon, and Dragon Warrior, because that's how we spent our childhood, and we want to share that with the next generation.
All right, let's get on to some accessories. Most were epic failures, including this one.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
The Power Glove. Just so much hype with this accessory. We punch out, you'd be able to like punch the screen, and all it landed up being was just a controller on your arm. That's all I could get to work. I don't know if you guys bought this accessory, if you had more success with it, but it the potential from that, so much hype, so much possibility, and just a complete failure in terms of execution.
So I remember so clearly in grade 6 that only one person in our class had it. Her name was Zoe. And everyone just borrowed it from her and pretended to be her friend for that week that we borrowed it. And then when each and every one of us realized that we don't like this thing, we all stopped being her friend again. But, you know,
at
like,
least that week, people care.
Yeah, you know, at least for one week, every day, every week during the school year, she had a group of people like her. But then they all would just kind of abandon her the next week. You know,
I guess
if you look at it, though, think about, like, nobody really bought them. Everybody was borrowing them or renting them. How many grubby little hands that were picking their nose were touching those things before you used yours?
Yeah. It's like the bowling shoe of NES accessories, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, the gun was probably one of the best, but that came with the console. But, you know, and for the most part, it did work. Although, you know, I guess you could cheat and just walk directly to the screen and kind of like put the gun, you know, and duck hunt.
Yeah, but I have honor, unlike you.
Well, you could actually just shoot the corner all the time, and they would always die.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah, so but for the most part, I guess the gun was one of the best. I mean, NES Max as well. You know, you got the rapid-fire buttons and stuff. That was kind of fun.
Well, they had a couple of really cool controllers, but I thought the Game Genie was probably the best accessory because it gave second life to those games. You know, that was a time when GameStop and EB Games weren't around. So if and when you got a game as a present or you saved up enough allowances to buy one, there was nowhere to trade it to unless you had a friend who wanted to trade it with you.
Yeah.
You know, so when you got the Game Genie, it gave a second life to the game. It allowed you to play it in a completely different way. And sometimes it was easier. Sometimes it was a lot harder.
I know the Game Genie for myself, it actually helped me with the 72-pin connector. And a lot of times when I would put it in the Genie and then put the Genie in, I'd get a lot more success running some of those games. So that's one reason I used it. And definitely, you know, we didn't have the internet back then. We didn't have social media and all that stuff. So the fact of being able to use cheats was very new and very different. And yeah, the Genie was definitely one of the trendsetters for all the stuff coming out today.
And I think the other big one we have to mention is the robot.
Oh, the gyro mice.
I remember someone came to our house and demonstrated it, and it was cool at the time, but I mean, it was functionally useless. I think there was maybe two or three games that you can use it for, and I believe it was quite expensive. It was about what, maybe $250?
Yeah, it was not.
And cheap. You know, you're spending that kind of money to play like two games when you can even play the games just without it. So, to me, it was probably the biggest, like, I guess, waste of money. Cool concept, but just something that didn't work.
I mean, if you're looking back to the Power Pad, you know, it's the precursor to the Wii Fit. So, like, the track and field games you'd run on the pad and stuff. I don't know if you guys had the pad at all.
No,
we never had the pad.
Yeah, well, it just, you know, it didn't work that great.
It's called getting exercise.
My
mom let me go outside, Keith. I don't know about yours.
But still back it. I mean, I like the concept, you know, like they didn't really push it towards fitness or whatever, but at least, you know, you get off the couch, get off your ass, and maybe run on the pad for a minute and then say, fuck it, and just go back. But any other accessories that I might not have mentioned?
I wouldn't call it an accessory per se. It probably should fall more into the game thing, but it was that one cartridge that had like 900 games on it.
Oh, those were great.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's what to call that, but that was the greatest thing ever when one of your favorites got it.
101.
Yeah, we had 101.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you see that and you're like, why am I buying one cartridge when you can fit 100 games on one? It just...
Yeah, but then you go look at those games today comparatively to the games that were one cartridge, and you can actually physically see the difference.
Yeah, it's just... Like, what was that one? Well, you'd have the ostrich, you'd be running around with an ostrich. It's like a... I'm totally botching it here. But you'd be on an ostrich and you'd be like, not fencing, jousting, joust.
Yeah.
There you go.
The stupid ostrich, joust, yeah. Circus, all those like just simple games.
Circus was fun, though.
It was fun, yeah. Okay, let's get into the longevity of the NES. You know, to this day, it's still playable. And how about the quality of it? I mean, you paid $100 for it. And apart from that one connector, if you replace the connector, I mean, most of the time, these consoles are still functional. A lot of people have refurbed them, and they've had them 20, 30 years. You know, we're talking about Ring of Death by Xbox and PS4s crashing in 2 seconds. You've got this console that's still going to this day. Imagine just the quality of this console that was made. You know, back it wasn't a trendsetter in terms of, like, you know, pushing the limits of technology, but for the price point, I mean, it was fantastic and still holds up to this day, guys.
Yeah, I mean, if you also just look at the style of it now, you know, with this new hipster generation of everything is horn-rimmed, square-rimmed, it's still got a style that makes sense today as well. You know, if we look at, like you said, in our current generation of everything breaking, everything not lasting more than 2 years, the fact that Nintendos are still going for 30 years is just a testament to classic, well-built designs.
Absolutely. Kebo with D-Ren, do you guys still have your consoles?
No,
we haven't had it. We got rid of it after we got...
Genesis, eh?
After we got Genesis, yeah. But it's kind of cool to see like that, you know, Nintendo's been able to stay alive 30 years when Sega pretty much
died.
Yeah, they died after, well, I guess it's basically after the Genesis. None of their other stuff was successful. I mean, Atari died out. But Nintendo, like, and the NES and I guess Nintendo in general has had a really long stay. I guess, you know, they're not at the top anymore. But what they were able to do for gaming is still felt today, so...
I mean, and it's also being lived on emulators. And, you know, Nintendo's even got their official stuff on the Wii and the Wii U where you can buy old games for $5. But just the hacker scene as well, you know, grabbing all these ROMs and putting them up for free for everybody. And I know Nintendo kind of frowns on it, but still, I mean, in all your new consoles, if you've modded them or hacked them or whatever, you can play all old NES games. I'll give you an example of the open... console, the Ouya that I bought. One of the most appealing things for me is the fact that I can put an NES emulator on there and play all the old games. So it's cool to see how that culture has been so passionate to grab all the ROMs off the games and host that stuff. And really the hacker culture, I find, has really adopted the NES as one of the great systems that lives on to this day.
Now, I'd like to touch on something Kevin's just said, where it's like they're struggling today. We've obviously I've spoke about what's happened with the Wii U, but that being said, the number one selling current gaming system in the world is the 3DS. Nintendo is still a very profitable company, even though we might not be using them in our generation because they're more focused on this current generation's kids. But the Nintendo 3DS, especially with their Pokemon titles, are just everywhere.
That I find really surprising because you can get pretty much similar gaming on smartphones, and I'm still surprised that the 3DS is holding up, considering that...
But then you'd have to buy your 10-year-old kids a smartphone.
That's a good point, yeah. Do you think Nintendo would come out with like kind of a phone console thing?
If they would, it would be only for the Japanese market, and it would only be 95% a gaming system. You know, Sony's already tried, and it failed miserably. And you got to also remember, you know, it's like Nintendo is an 800-pound gorilla in the video gaming market. If they were to enter the cell phone market, they'd be nothing but scraps. You know, they would have to go against Samsung and, let's be brutally honest, Apple. You know, and nobody really wins if they go against Apple. It just doesn't happen.
That's a good point, yeah, especially, I mean, just the margins now, you know, that the market is so mature and you've got so many players, yeah.
I mean, Apple's got a bigger market capacity than Exxon Valdez, which is an oil company. You know,
it's true.
It's crazy. You don't go against Apple. You accept that they own a market and you try to take the scraps that they don't want.
Okay, question for you guys. NES, greatest console of all time?
To me, I think it is. I mean, in terms of graphics and stories, no, it doesn't have like the bells and whistles that a lot of these current games have, current consoles have. But in just terms of, I know there's a bunch of shit that Nintendo produced, but in terms of games that like were classics and I still enjoy playing, I think it has the most classic games, has the most fun level. These games were so simple, but they were yet so complex with like being difficult at times. So to me, yeah, I think it is the greatest system in terms of just like fun and playability.
Cabo Trek, do you agree?
I think it is for different reasons. I think especially after the video game crash from 83 to 85, having, you know, Nintendo basically single-handedly bring the video game market back kind of shows that it like just it's more at the importance it's had and how it's influenced everything, I guess, up until maybe the PS2. But just for me, it's not necessarily about the games, because I mean there was a million fantastic games, and I think it's one of those things where we forget all the bad games and just remember the good ones.
Yeah, well, that's
like
the
in anything.
Yeah.
I mean, same with like oldies music and stuff like that. You know, when you see playlists, it's always the classics and not all the crap that was put out then. But so for me, it's not necessarily about all the classic games, because even though there was a bunch, there was still a lot of, like, I can find probably a good 15-20 games from Genesis that I loved as much as these games. But it's, for me, it would be probably the greatest just because of the impact it had on video gaming. And if it wasn't Nintendo, I think for me it would probably be the PlayStation 2, and I say this as someone who didn't have one. But
yeah.
So just because it really brought a new player into the game and really changed that kind of Nintendo just versus Sega thing. So for me, it's the greatest just because of what it did for gaming.
I always relate back that Nintendo-Sega rivalry to, like, WWF versus WCW. And I always see Sega as, like, the WCW. And I always stayed loyal to Nintendo. I bought an SNES. And I remember playing Sega back in the day with you. You were big into Genesis. But, yeah, Sega for me was always, like, the WCW. And then they just, you know, they got screwed over at the end. And Nintendo took them out. Well, I guess during the console wars over there. But I personally, I think Nintendo is my favorite console. I think it's one of the greatest consoles of all time. And a lot because of D-Ren said, you know, you got games dating back to the early 80s franchises like Zelda and Mario that we play to this day. But that the fact that I could sit back and play Punch-Out for an hour, I could play River City Ransom for an hour, Dr. Mario, Tetris, Kirby, and still really enjoy it, to me, that's fantastic, given the limitations of the console back in the day. But that could just be back, you know, when I was 7 or 8 years old, that was what I was first introduced to. And so I have more of an emotional connection than, say, an Xbox 360 or PS2 or what have you. So, but for myself, I would say the NES was the trendsetter and the greatest console ever developed.
But that,
Scruff. Sorry, go ahead.
But that's kind of like when we remember our childhood, we kind of remember that, like, I guess it's for most of us, it was that first gaming experience. Like, in terms of graphics, in terms of whatever, Genesis obviously was better than Nintendo. Super NES was better than Nintendo. But when we reflect and when we have nostalgia, it's not for Genesis. It's for Nintendo. It was almost like that childhood innocence that you had with it. And I think for that reason, we remember it a lot more than we remember Atari or Genesis or Super Nintendo.
Or we remember it better than it actually was.
Yeah, that's it, because it was the thing. It was, we grew up with it. It comes down to we forget the bad and just remember the good.
Scruff, would you agree NES greatest system of all time?
I understand your points. I agree with most of them. But for me, no. The answer is Sega Genesis. I absolutely love Sonic. I loved Vector Man. I loved everything about my Genesis. I still think about it. I still go to bed dreaming about it. It was the greatest system I ever played.
I wasn't a fan of that 3-button controller. I found it awkward.
Yeah, well, you can't ever handle more than 2 nipples at a time.
Well, ironically, I'm actually playing a Genesis game right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm playing Shining Force 2.
Okay. But you were a Sega guy.
Yeah, I was 100%. Yeah, never had an SNES. The thing that Sega did so well compared to Super Nintendo was its sports games.
I was going to say the same thing.
Like, that was the one. Generally, like, the sports games were far, far superior. The controllers, the handling, having, I don't know why just Super Nintendo couldn't get it right when Genesis did.
It's true. Yeah, maybe did they have maybe the more exclusive titles, the developers? I mean,
no, but even like NHL 92. No, not 90.
NHL 92 is the best.
But like when they'd have like NHL games on both consoles, it would work better on.
Yeah, I would agree. Sega did have the better sports.
And then
games,
the other thing I remember, I guess it's going a little off topic, is when Mortal Kombat came to the consoles. And for Genesis, they kept in the blood, and for Super Nintendo, they switched it all to sweat.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they had different markets. Sega had the more adult or more mature audience.
Yeah, that's it.
I would also go on to say with Sega that when Mortal Kombat came out, they also came out with a second controller that was 6 buttons that instantly made Mortal Kombat a whole lot easier. And like you just kind of touched on, Keith, you know, I always found Sega Genesis more adult games. They were bigger, better, faster, and the games themselves were made for people who didn't want to play Mario anymore. They were tired of the Mario world.
All right, let's get our top 5, and then we're going to end with a little bit of Name That Tune, like we did with the music and movies episode for Old School at the Movies. So let's get our top 5 games for the NES. We'll start with Scruff.
My top 5, it starts with Battletoads. That's number 5 for me. I loved it. Double Dragon would be number 4. I remember playing it from the arcades, and then my mom bringing me home a copy one day after I had a really good report card, and it was one of the greatest days of my childhood. Number 3 would be Metroid. I remember crying when I beat that game out of just pure joy. Number 2, the game that made me angriest, Mega Man. And any of the other Mega Mans that came out of Nintendo. You know, let's just go back to Mega Man real quick. On Xbox Live right now, you can go actually buy new Mega Man games that are 8-bit.
Oh, that's fun.
You know, and my number one Nintendo game of all time is Contra. You know, we talked about the Konami code before, but there's nothing that's more iconic to me about Nintendo than putting in that up, up, down, down, left, right, and getting those 30 lives and then running around with my little bandana and my badass jean jacket that was ripped off at the sleeves and just shooting machines and guys who are running at me. And then getting the gun that had the spray bullets. It was so much fun. You know, when I look at this list, obviously everybody's going to say, how can you not put Mario? I think Super Mario Bros. 3 is the greatest game to ever touch Nintendo. But I decided to look at this list as, let's remove the Mario Brothers from it.
Interesting you mention that, because of the fact that third-party developers had a lot more trouble than the platformers to do well. So you really had to look outside of your comfort box there. But I'm noticing a pattern, a lot of side-scrollers. You're a fan of those, eh?
Yeah, I'm still a fan of those to this day. You know, on my Xbox One, my favorite game so far has been this game, little small game called Max and the Curse of Brotherhood. And it's a side-scroller puzzle solver, and I still love those to this day.
All right, let's get my top five. And I was never that big of a side-scroller fan because I sucked at side-scrollers. I was not good at them. I prefer the open-world stuff. My number five would probably be Dr. Mario. Dr. Mario is a puzzle game. It's kind of falls on like the Tetris-esque kind of game, but I just immersed myself in it. Remember one Christmas I got it and fell in love with it. So much fun. River City Ransom, we had mentioned earlier. It's just an open world. You just walk around collecting money, punching guys in the face, collecting coins. Bad Dudes was kind of similar, but it was the side-scroller version, I guess, of that. Mario 3, I know Scruff went the route of not mentioning Mario's, but I thought just for its time, just one of the greatest design games in terms of audio, video, immersing yourself, auto-saving, just really ahead of its time in terms of development. Punch-Out would be my number two because of the classic villains. The gameplay was super fun. And, you know, even though I never passed the game myself, I still to this day will play it. And my number one, and I've bought consoles because of this franchise, is The Legend of Zelda. You know, the second Legend of Zelda was interesting because it was the first and only side-scroller, but still it had an open world. It was a lot of fun. The first game would probably be my favorite game of all time. And I remember, you know, I had a lot of family stuff where my brother would pass a level, or my brother, and he's about 18 years older than me, he'd call me at 2 in the morning when I was a kid. Oh, did you pass level 4? You know what I mean? So it was a family experience. And I know that might be sad to say that, like, one of my only family experiences was with a video game. But it really brought kind of us together. You know, we didn't have a lot in common at the time. And video games brought us together. And, you know, again, I bought SNES. I bought the 64 because of the Zelda franchises. So that's my top game by far of all time. Kebo Trek, let's get your top five.
I tried to stay away from more of the big titles as well, and just kind of, because I remember D-Ren and I, we were talking on Wednesday, and we were listing 25, 30 games that could easily make this list.
Absolutely.
So I just tried to go for different ones that weren't necessarily going to be put on. So in no particular order, you mentioned River City Ransom. I think for me, it has to be on there just because it was ahead of its time, and it was a precursor to a lot of stuff that's come out since. And it was just a lot of fun, like even from the way the arms went back when you punched, like little things like that. It was fun. I liked the graphics, I liked the gameplay, and just that open world concept that at the time didn't really happen. I'll mention Cobra Triangle. I actually forgot about this game till today when I was just looking over some list of Nintendo games, but it was a fun, unique game. You're playing this little triangle speedboat, and you're doing obstacle courses, you're fighting bosses, you're doing races.
Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, that's it, and you know, just, I remember that little gun you'd have, and you'd shoot your little bullets, and it was a lot of fun, and I mean, it's a speedboat racing game, so a lot of fun playing it, and it was tough, but I enjoyed it. I have to mention Bubble Bobble.
Yeah, that you could play that for hours with a friend.
That's it. It's like, again, a very simple concept. You're basically in a square room for every level, just with some changes, but just a very unique game. You know, those levels where you had to get to the top just jumping on the bubbles and they'd break for like 10 minutes straight and, things like that. So it's just, I remember playing it for hours and just having so much fun. And of course, the music is...
Yeah, imagine that same song would play for hours and it wouldn't drive you nuts. It would actually be okay.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Second last one I'll mention is ice hockey.
Just for the playability, the fun.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, we played it, maybe a year ago or something like that, and we were having a blast with it.
It's true.
And, just having all those combos. You go with the four skinny guys, the four fat guys. Just all that little customization, and it was a very simple game, but it was just so much fun. And if you're having fun like with something like that, there's just, there's nothing better. It was simple, but...
Nothing better except for Blades of Steel.
Blades of Steel. Gets the pass. Oh.
Blades of Steel was awesome as well.
The sound effects are so bad, but for its time, I mean.
Yeah, man. And the last one I'll mention is DuckTales. Just because,
That was a fun game.
It was. Like, every world was different, and, I mean, it was always fun to see those characters.
It's another game that they actually just remastered onto an Xbox Live arcade version.
Yeah, I remember hearing
about. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's really cool that they're bringing them back like that with the emulators and remastering it and updating it and just for that, so that new generation, so the kids can enjoy what we enjoyed, 20, 30 years ago. All right, D-Ren, let's get your top five.
Okay, I changed one of my picks because I forgot about this game. So number five, instead of Punch-Out, which was a great game, I have Bionic Commando. I just love the fact that your character couldn't jump. He just had this metal arm that he would grasp things with and attack people with. That's number five. And I also enjoyed the fact that it was kind of, I don't want to say it's open world, but you kind of, if I remember correctly, you choose your path to go to the end. Like, you have different levels you could pick or sidestep them and go to other levels. So that's number five.
Wasn't it sad, though, how terrible the modern version was that they made about 5 years ago?
Because I hope not, because I actually bought it for like $7 on Xbox 360. I haven't played it yet, so.
That's a big waste of $7.
I guess so. At number four, which a lot of people have, is River City Ransom. It's just so much fun to play with the second player, and just going through the levels and beating up. I think they're rival gangs, if I'm not mistaken. Number three, I have Mega Man 2. I mean, most of the games in the franchise on Nintendo were phenomenal, but to me, I just love Mega Man 2 the best because I think it had more enemies, and I just remember like the Airman and like the Metal Guy or
Quick Man.
Oh, just some of the parts in those levels were very difficult, and I do remember playing Mega Man 1 trying to pass it now, and just toward the end, like when you beat all the when you beat all the mini bosses and then try to go to, I forget the guy's name, Doctor. It's not Doctor. Is it Doctor? The Mad Professor? Anyway, just that platforming without a save is like impossible to do. I mean, it's, anyway, so yeah, I have fond memories for Mega Man 2. Number 2 would be another sequel, a Double Dragon 2. I just remembered enjoying it, playing with my brother. And just having more moves, the levels were cool. It was just an update on Double Dragon 1, which was also a great game. But to me, I just remember loving the style and having more moves to pull off. And finally, number one would be Little Nemo Dream Master. I just absolutely love the game. It just is when I was playing, it was just so magical. You could take different suits. Like, you kill a bee and there'd be a bee suit and then you'd be able to fly. It's kind of a ripoff on Mario, where you kind of take the raccoon suit and you can kind of, twirl your tail. But, they had the mole suit where you can dig in the ground. So I just remember enjoying this game about a kid in Dreamland and trying to pass platforming levels. So that's my top five.
Yeah, very open world as well with that. I remember playing that and... Kebo Trek, was that the one you traded for 10-yard fight? I'm trying to remember.
No, that was Baby Mario.
Baby, yeah. Greatest trade ever. No, my buddy trades Baby Mario, a Japanese game, for like the worst football game ever, 10-yard fight.
Pretty much.
All right, let's end the show with a bit of NES Name That Tune. I mean, some of these 8-bit themes to this day, just when I hear them, just bring up great memories. So we did this with the Music and Movies podcast, and it was a lot of fun. Maybe some controversy over who I picked guessed the theme first. So this controversy might continue. We'll see. But we do have a few less players here. So let's start with our first theme. See if you guys can get it.
Metroid.
Castlevania?
No, you got it. Kev got it.
Oh, good. Punch Out.
Yeah.
Zelda. Oh no. Zelda.
Yeah. Zelda.
Yeah.
Why did you hesitate, Cap? Come
on. I don't know. I'm like, it can't be that easy.
Mega Man.
Oh my god.
Mega Man.
No.
Double Dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have got that one.
Yeah, you were talking about Double Dragon for like an hour.
Yeah, I know.
It sounded so similar to the to Mega Man, though.
The heck is this?
Battletoads?
No.
Sightbike?
No. Kirby!
I
struck that from my memory. I'm a straight male.
Mega Man.
That's Mega Man.
Nope.
What?
Come on, guys!
Oh, shit.
Excitebike!
No. Oh, my God.
Contra, sorry.
Yeah.
Was it Ghost?
Castlevania.
Yeah, that.
You fail at life.
What?
Oh my god.
Oh, this is Zelda 2!
Yeah.
Oh yeah, in the cellars, right?
Yeah.
Is that Bionic? No, that's not Bionic.
Ninja Gaiden?
That sounds like Ninja Gaiden.
If I don't know, I'm always just going to say Mega Man.
Castlevania!
Oh, jeez.
Sounded way too upbeat for Castlevania.
Yeah.
Mega Man.
You guys ever heard of Life Force?
No.
No.
Ninja Gaiden.
No. Okay, that's Mega Man.
Oh.
Mario.
Mario. Yeah. Or Mario 2.
Yeah.
Dr. Mario.
Close.
Tetris.
Close. No, not Tetris.
It's another Mario. It's not. It's Mario. Mario 3?
Yeah.
Oh my god, Bubble Bobble!
No!
I know this!
Oh shit. Is that Nemo?
Yeah, I have no clue.
I think it was
That's
Nemo.
It's Little Nemo! Nemo. Yeah. It was! I can't believe I didn't know that.
Bad dudes?
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say that!
Music is one of the most powerful mediums in the world. Ever since video games. So small chores.
Oh, fucker, hold on.
But it's funny how you, like, you cannot hear these songs for 15 years.
And you're like, boom, it's down.
That's the thing about music. There is no right or wrong list. I mean, your list is gonna be different than pretty much everybody else's in the entire world.
Sorry.
Hello, internet. You're watching my 20 NES.
Come on, Kev, seriously?
River City Rent.
No.
Cobra Triangle.
It was on your top five.
Ice Hockey?
DuckTales.
Yeah.
Hey! Oh, Jesus.
This not bubble Ninja bubble?
That's Tetris.
Oh.
Really?
Wow.
That's not what I remember from Tetris.
Yeah, because you played the Game Boy one.
Bionic Commando?
No, I should have listed this on my top five. RC Pro-Am.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
I never liked that game.
No, I love this game.
It's a great game.
Wasn't a side-scroller, I'm out.
Yeah, you're the king of the side-scrollers. All right, so we're going to end the show there. Thank you very much for listening, guys. This is going to be episode one of the Way Back Throwback. And if you guys have any ideas for shows, let me know. Tweet me at oldmovies.net, or you could email me at oldschoolmovies2@gmail.com. Of course, we don't really have a website or anything yet for this. We're going to see how well it does. If you guys want to hear more old school stuff, this is actually a rebirth of a podcast. This was done originally a couple years ago with Jason Rivera, PK Punk, Fat Ninja, and etc. So if you guys want to hear more of this stuff on the Trending Topics Network, let us know. This has been episode one for the Way Back Throwback for Kebbo, Trek, Scruff, D-Ren. This is Mr. Old School. Thank you very much for listening.